So on Mic Check this Saturday morning, sparking global changes, remembering the long-lasting and profound legacy of peace and nonviolence of an African-American activist, civil rights leader. He was born, ladies and gentlemen, in Atlanta, Georgia. He was born on the 15th of January, 1929. Sadly, on April 4th, 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, at the tender age of 39. But what a profound legacy Dr. Martin Luther King has left with us, ladies and gentlemen. And we're talking about civil rights. We're talking about voting rights. We're talking about the Fair Housing Act. Dr. Martin Luther King left us with a long-lasting legacy. Joining me this morning to talk about and to have this conversation is noted author and educator with a Doctor of Education from Columbia University, Dr. Bernard Gassaway, has now joined us. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, brother. How are you?
I am good, you know, Doc. I woke up this morning, my 2 feet touched the ground, and it's a blessed day to be here, sir.
Yes, sir. Same here. Same here.
As I welcome you to Grooving Radio, you heard my opening statement. We're celebrating the life and times and remembering the life and times of one of the greatest African-American men to have ever walked this earth, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. What a profound individual Dr. King was, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it's interesting when you say correctly in terms of celebrating his legacy, I'm reminded of a quote that he said. He left us with many quotes and many things, but one of the quotes that come to mind is the hottest place in hell is reserved for those in a time of moral crises who maintain their neutrality. Mm. You know, and it just reminds me of today how many who he fought for during his lifetime today seem to maintain their neutrality in what arguably is a time of moral crisis when you look at what's happening in the United States, and when you look at what's happening across the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, you look at Dr. King's legacy, and you look at where we are from and where we come from, and you look at the injustice. You look at what Dr. Martin Luther King advocated for in these United States. Ends today, black folks in this country, brown folks in this country, women in this country can vote. We have civil rights, the Fair Housing Act, profound work of Dr. Martin Luther King, a legacy that is going to last forever. He died at a tender age. He was assassinated at a tender age of age 39. The work of Dr. King, powerful, huh?
Yeah, it's very, very powerful. I think when I think about Dr. King, and I'm sure others do the same thing, they may ask themselves, and you may ask, well, what does he think about the impact of his legacy? And I would think that he would look at it sort of like a paradoxical, right? Two things can be true at the same time. On the one hand, he'll look at his legacy and be proud, as he should, of the advancements in education, the advancement in politics, because you look around the country, you have many black legislators, right? You have many black educators. So on that front, I think that he would be extremely proud. But on the other hand, I think he would be disheartened by the lack of progress that is being made by these individuals, some of the same individuals that who we celebrate who are in these positions. You know, it goes back to my opening quote from him about maintaining neutrality. So yeah, I look at it in terms of his legacy is powerful. Mm-hmm. It motivated me as a child. It continues to motivate me as an adult, and I think that it motivates people the world over.
Mm. You know, Dr. Martin Luther King won the Nobel Peace Prize. Hmm?
Yeah.
He has been given countless and numerous awards. He left us at a very tender age, at age 39. The impactfulness of Dr. King, very, very impactful. Not only here in the United States, Dr. Grassway, around the world. I mean, how you think Dr. King was able to do such great work at such a young age, huh?
Yeah, that's interesting. You're right, because he, of the tender age of 39, which, mm-hmm. my God, it flees, you know, in terms of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was able to do it
mm-hmm.
because he was being used by God. You know, I think that God decided to use him as a vehicle, as a vessel to communicate this powerful message, you know, of love. You know, and the power of that, even the power of nonviolence,
mm-hmm.
you know, as he professed
mm-hmm.
throughout his life,
mm-hmm.
Constantly. So I believe he's the vehicle of God in terms of bringing about some of the impacts and showing us the way.
Mm-hmm.
Right, showing us the way through his vision, which he clearly articulated, and I think he left enough with us in terms of a blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
For us to carry it out,
mm-hmm.
if we have the courage and the foresight to do so.
Mm. In March 1963,
mm-hmm.
there was a march on Washington, D.C., where Dr. King delivered the "I Have a Dream" speech. Come this Monday, Dr. Martin Luther King Day is celebrated here in these United States. But we are going to have the inauguration of someone who I think don't believe in Dr. King. How troubling is this? Because I look at this now as it could have been intentional in terms of the inauguration, and it's being done on Dr. Martin Luther King Day. We're living in some troubling times, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very troubling, you know, because when you think about the hopefulness of the dream,
mm-hmm.
and as an educator,
mm-hmm.
I often think about how is the legacy of Dr. King being maintained or communicated to the younger generation,
mm-hmm.
and what we often focus on is the dream,
mm-hmm.
But what we don't focus on in any of the school systems that I'm aware of,
mm-hmm.
we don't focus on the nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We don't focus on the reality of the nightmare that he had to live through, that we had to live through and continue to live through.
Mm-hmm.
And as manifested through the election of Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
You know, who arguably is an evil person. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's mm-hmm. my perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what was more profound than his evil ways
mm-hmm.
and his devilishness
mm-hmm.
is the fact that he was applauded by millions of Americans,
yes.
both
mm-hmm.
white, black,
mm-hmm.
Latino. It's profound. It's just, I'm dumbfounded when I think about it,
mm-hmm.
and that's the nightmarish part of the reality that Dr. King fought for.
Mm-hmm.
Died for, and others,
mm-hmm.
right, and others,
mm-hmm.
but that where we are today, and that speaks again to the paradox of while there's progress,
mm-hmm.
There's also we're standing still in many cases, and not progressing in the way that we should, because if we were where we were supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
We would not be facing next week Monday
mm-hmm.
an inauguration of arguably an evil person.
Mm. You know, the civil rights movement led by Dr. Martin Luther King achieved some pivotal legislative gains here in these United States. And it wasn't long ago, folks. And you talk about how do we convey the message to the youngsters, the younger generation. 1964, the Civil Rights Act. That's not long ago. 1965, the Voting Rights Act. It wasn't long ago. 1968, the Fair Housing Act. That wasn't long ago. And it brings me to this. Maya Angelou once says, our biggest issue today is not how we survive, but how we thrive. Maya Angelou once says, our biggest issue today is not how we survive, but how we thrive. How do we thrive in these troubling times, Dr. Bernard Gassaway? How do we?
I think the major area that can help be an impetus to our thriving would be education. And when I speak of education, I'm not necessarily speaking of formal or traditional education. Because formal education, from my perspective, it has taught us to be, it has been a pacifier, if you will. It has not encouraged us to be independent. It has not taught us necessarily to thrive as a people. If anything, it's sort of like divided us in terms of that. So I think that we have to figure out as a people or as a like-minded people, I mean of all races, we have to think about a way to educate ourselves and our children in a way that's independent of a public school system that by many measures is designed to maintain the status quo. You know, when I say that, people say, well, how are we supposed to do that? Well, we have the resources now with the access to technology. We have the resources to educate ourselves beyond what the school system offers. Dr. Carter G. Woodson in 1933 wrote a book called The Miseducation of the Negro. And in that book, he states that the if you control a man's thinking, if you control a man's mind, you can control his behavior. And you no longer have to tell him or her to go to the back of the bus because he or she will do it conditionally. And if you think about in a very symbolic way, when many of our young people to this day in 2025, when they get on the bus, they go right to the back.
You know, mothering injustice. And I'm going to talk about a thing that Dr. King always addressed, which is systematic inequality. How do you interpret that call to action today, in today's context? And what step can communities and leaders take to embody this urgency in combating mothering injustice? Because I remember Dr. King once says that they're telling us to pull up ourselves by our bootstraps. And Dr. King says, how do you tell a bootless man to pull himself up by the bootstraps? So you talk about mothering injustice and equality. What can we do today, Dr. Grassaway, to combat all of this?
Yeah, it's a monumental task to convince someone that what they need is going to require a great amount of continued struggle. The struggle did not begin, nor will it end with Dr. King. And in some ways, I believe many of us behave as if we have overcome. You know, if you think about when Barack Obama was elected president of the United States of America, people expressed that racism, we're post-racial America, and there's nothing further from the truth. So you have to know that when you're touching an oven that's on, that it's hot. And so in order for us to make advancements, we have to, like, acknowledge that there's pain, right? That we can't be numb to it. You know, you have to know that it is hot in here, and then we have to continue to struggle. Man, people died, again, many years before King and even many years after King.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to continue to struggle. Struggle is not what we may currently see. For example, if you look at the average protest in this century, you may have a week, 7 days, 8 days. But then if you go back to the 1955 boycott in Montgomery, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
that boycott was 381 days.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine that happening today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so something like that,
mm-hmm.
something like that needs to happen at various times in order to wake us up.
Mm-hmm.
Because they say that we're woke and with all these whatever the Democrats are being accused of, the liberal stances.
Mm-hmm.
But I argue that we're not woke, that we're still asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to wake up in order to realize the vision or the dream that Dr. King had about racial justice and social justice and social equality.
Wow. We are still asleep, ladies and gentlemen. Program note, you're listening to Groovin' Radio. My name is Ras Clem. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, Sparking Global Changes Around the World, remembering the long-lasting and profound legacy of peace and nonviolence of African-American activist and civil rights leader, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Ladies and gentlemen, my special guest today is noted author and educator with a Doctor of Education from Columbia University, Dr. Bernard Gassaway. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, I think we made a mistake, and Doc, maybe you will concur with me, because did we fall back asleep after 1968, after the Fair Housing Act? Did we fall asleep after the Voting Rights Act? Did we fall asleep after the Civil Rights Act? What happened? Because it seems as if there have been a long pause in the fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did fall asleep. I mean, and I think that the sleeping pill, if you will, metaphorically speaking, is education.
Mm.
You know, I think that there was a fight to integrate public schools,
mm-hmm.
And some argue that blacks, there was more advancements in education for blacks prior to integration. So that's an argument that some can make. But I would argue that even through integration, what we call de jure by law integration, that we still are not being educated in any meaningful way, you know, throughout the public school systems. And I would argue that while I earned my doctorate from Columbia University, mm-hmm. one of the top universities in the country,
mm-hmm.
I credit most of my education that I learned on my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just learning in my community,
mm-hmm.
learning sometimes in the churches,
mm-hmm.
In the mosque, you know, just conversing with different people, reading mm-hmm. different material that wasn't necessarily taught in the schools. So, yes, we've fallen asleep. I also think that one of the reasons why we're as docile as we are, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying that in a violent way. I'm just talking about being woke.
Mm-hmm.
The one of the ways that we're docile is because of fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fear. Dr. King knew that he had professed that I'm going to die,
yes.
and that I'm not going to live beyond to see my 40th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happened with our beloved Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that he said, his quote was, "I'm a dead man already."
Mm.
He knew that he was going to die.
Mm.
But it didn't stop them.
Mm.
It didn't stop them from moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you think about it, what's really disappointing in many ways is when Dr. King was alive, he had what we would call lieutenants, right? You mm-hmm. had Andrew Young,
mm-hmm.
and you had a lieutenant by the name of Jesse Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
But think about what Jesse Jackson said about Barack Obama,
mm.
and what Andrew Young said about Barack Obama,
mm.
before he was president. And Jesse Jackson said, and I'm going to paraphrase it just for the audience, that he said, cut Barack Obama's genitals off. That's what he said. And then Andrew Young said that Bill Clinton was more black than Barack Obama. And so I would imagine that King would be turning over in his grave,
indeed,
saying to his brothers, what happened?
Yeah, yeah.
What happened?
You know, you talk about fear, and oftentimes when folks ask me, what happened to our great black leaders today? And I would say that if you look at what America has done with the leaders that came before, and I could even go as far back as Jamaica's first national hero, the black globalist, Marcus Mosiah Garvey, Jamaica's first national hero, and what they did with Garvey. And you look at what they did with King. You look at what they did with Mega Evers. You look at what they did with Malcolm X. And you look at all what they did with those great leaders. They killed them. They assassinate most of them. And they drove fear into other blacks. King was jailed several times. The FBI director at the time, J. Edgar Hoover, he considered Martin Luther King to be a radical, and he made him an object of the Federal Investigative Bureau, the FBI, and they would just dig into Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King once says, life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? But Doc, as an educator and as an advocate, how has this principle guided your work, and what advice would you give to others looking to honor the profound legacy through service of Dr. Martin Luther King?
Yeah, I would, and thank you for that question. It's a powerful question because many of our schools across the country, whether they're serving white children, black children, Latino children, principals or leaders and teachers have a profound role to play. So that principle for me has enabled me to continue the struggle. I honestly cannot think of any job that I had as an educator where there hasn't been struggle in terms of, particularly when it came to fighting on behalf of children. I decided early in my career that I would never put my financial security over the security of children. And I think that that meant that I would be willing to lose my job on a matter of principle if children were being hurt under my watch. I cannot remain silent. So that's what his legacy and that of Malcolm X, that legacy has enabled me to lead the way I've always led. You know, I've led with that principle. And again, I've encountered people in the system, education systems who were charged with protecting children, but they looked the other way when children were being harmed. And so I say that if you are in a position and you're not willing to fight for children at all costs, you need to get out of that position or be removed.
Indeed, indeed. Before we go up to the top of the hour, Dr. Martin Luther King's vision extended beyond, way beyond civil rights to economic justice, education equality, and global peace. In your views, Doc, what progress have we made in realizing this broader vision, and what areas are still we're still required to significant work in?
Yes, I think the time that we have, I think that there's a small percentage of individuals who have amassed a certain amount of wealth, let's say within the black community, and that community of wealth is not necessarily benefiting the larger majority of black folks, right? I think the area that we can actually begin to see some of that global economic prosperity mm-hmm. starts with what I would call land ownership, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to teach our young the importance of land ownership versus renting, mm-hmm. just in terms of that mentality. And also we have to teach our young people to get a passport mm-hmm. and to be able to travel, not only to see the world, but to see boroughs in New York City, for example, boroughs beyond the borough that you live in. There's a state called New York State. New York State is not New York City. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who grow up in Brooklyn who never get to go to Manhattan or upstate New York. Mm. So they don't get to travel in order to see that there's a world beyond their immediate block where they live.
You know, it's amazing you said that, you know. It's really amazing you said that, because I've had this conversation over and over again about folks who were born and raised in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, and has never been to Staten Island. Stick and stay, Doc. Stick and stay. We're at the 11 o'clock hour. I have to stay, have to take a station ID. 60 seconds. Just stay right where you are.
Sure.
Yeah. Sing it, sing it. Tyrus Ryder representing. For grooving radio, you know? All the girls who are tight and all man go on. Bless up. I'm a grooving. Listening to grooving radio. Come on, man.
From Black Bridge to the George Washington Bridge. From the top of the Empire State Building to the Blue Mountain Peak.
Of New York City.
It's Irie Jam.
WQHT 97.1 FM HD3.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Grooving Radio right here on Irie Jam Radio. We are at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. We're sparking global changes around the world, remembering the long-lasting and profound legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. Before I get back to my guests, I'll play a few words from Dr. Martin Luther King.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. So just as I say we aren't gonna let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't gonna let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead.
Indeed.
But it really doesn't matter with me now.
Mm.
Because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will.
That's right.
And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Wow. Profound words from Dr. Martin Luther King. And you know, Doc, America has elected a far-right leader. something that Dr. King was not afraid to protest about. A far-right leader, a convicted felon, will be sworn in come this Monday on Dr. King's Day. In your words, what do you think Dr. King would be saying?
Well, in light of the fact that after he was assassinated, many of us did fall asleep. I think he would say that while it may be perceived as a negative for many across the country and across the world, that it may actually be a positive. I think he would look for the light among the darkness, right? I think that he would say that this may be the thing that's needed to wake us up again, to continue to struggle, because there are going to be things that are going to happen that may make the that may pale in comparison to what happened in the civil rights era. Because, you know, there are places in this country where time has stood still. Most recently, my lifelong bucket list items was to visit a place called Money, Mississippi. And that's where Emmett Till was assassinated or murdered in Mississippi. And so my daughter and I traveled there a year ago. And I tell you, brother, in the audience, that it was as if time stood still. The community that I drove through, it looked like shacks that were probably in existence back then. I was dumbfounded, and I said, my God, how could this be, you know? And I don't have a desire to ever go back, but it just reminded me of how throughout this country, how there are certain places, even a place like Selma, Alabama, where they had the Bloody Sunday on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. I visited that location with my daughter, and it was like being thrown back in time.
Wow.
So there continues to be this need for the struggle. The struggle needs to continue, and I think that Dr. King would be encouraging us to continue the struggle. And unfortunately, I don't think in my lifetime, I'm 64 years old, I would be very optimistic to say that I would see it in my daughter's lifetime, but not at the pace that we're currently going.
Wow. So it seems as if the clock paused, it stopped, because I am sitting here in chills. You talking about where Emil Tilt was executed and how it looked today. You're talking about going across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where many of our great leaders took beatings for us to be here today. And all of that have taken you back into time. And before we even took the 11 o'clock break, I did mention the fact that, and you mention it, that there are folks who were born here in New York, whether you're born in Queens or Brooklyn or Manhattan or the Bronx, and you have never really visited anywhere outside of New York or into even different part of the states, the state of New York, to see what it's like. So a lot of people are kind of stuck, huh?
Yes.
And it is sad. It is really sad, because the struggles of our great leaders and what they did for us to be here today. It seems as if many of us have not really take it in the right way to advance ourselves, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and it's not to be on a sad note, but I can only express the reality that I see. And I remember, again, as an educator, I remember going to China, but not physically, right? I went through China to China by reading a book. Uh-huh. I went to Africa by reading a book. Now, subsequently, 2 years ago, I actually traveled to Ghana, mm-hmm. you know, with my wife. Mm-hmm. But I was able to read and through, you know, literature, at least mentally, experience different things in different places. Mm-hmm. But sadly, and I think that this would be another profound thing that King would find disappointing. Mm-hmm. That while there were many fights mm-hmm. for education, that today I would argue and I would debate anyone mm-hmm. that many of our children, my brother and audience, are not reading.
True.
They're not reading. They say, oh, well, they read their text messages mm-hmm. or they read their Instagram. Mm-hmm. But they're not reading books.
Mm. And they're following TikTok and they're following all that stuff, huh?
Exactly. That's the world. That's the most important thing to many of our young people, where they'll spend I saw one research piece where they said they spend 8 hours a day online.
Yeah.
But yet they won't match that with reading a book. Mm. And then as an educator, as a father, as a community person, I can't get around us not reading. Mm-hmm. And this is irrespective of what happens in schools, because schools nowadays, they have come to realize that, or they've given up and say, well, we're not even going to ask young people to read books. Mm-hmm. We're just going to have them read chapters or parts of books.
Right.
And this is where the obligation, I believe, falls on the parents and on the community mm-hmm. to sort of promote things like reading. Mm-hmm. Because that's how we begin to nourish our minds, our bodies, even in terms of what we eat. It goes way beyond. I mean, we have to do, you know, we have to do better. And I think as a community, we can, but we... Mm. We have to wake up in order to do that.
Mm. You know, Dr. Grassway, I oftentimes tell my friends and my audience and my family that we're living in a Roman circus. Mm. And they keep asking me to explain this Roman circus. And I said, it's simple. Because you look at how the system keep us distracted. You look at how they keep us engaged with entertainment, which music and the movies and Hollywood and, you know, the sports and all of that. And that's what they want us to focus on. They don't want us to focus on the real issues that are germane to us. So they give a baseball player $600 million and they tell us to go have a conversation about that. But they don't want us to have a conversation about how America has now elected a far-right leader. And they'll tell us that, wow, you guys complain too much. Look, you had a black president. You had a black woman who was the vice president who's still currently the vice president of the United States. But then you turn around and you elect someone who wants to wipe away all of that. Isn't this disappointing, Dr. Grassway, that we have worked so hard? Dr. King and all those great leaders have worked so hard for us to get to where we are today. And it seems as if in the blink of an eye, all of this can be taken away. Hmm? Isn't that disappointing?
Yeah, very, very disappointing. You know, and I'll tell you, though, I don't believe when President Barack Obama, when Barack Obama was elected president of the United States, mm-hmm. I was not an individual who believed that, okay, we have arrived. Mm. And the reason I didn't believe that, because I knew that America mm-hmm. would allow a black man to be in the White House, but America wouldn't necessarily let a black man run America.
Right.
You know, so yes, symbolically, there were many advantages where young people grow up and believe that they too could become president. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like the putting me in charge of a plantation, but reminding me every day that my job is not to reform the plantation, but to run the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of the plantation is to be profitable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's your job. And if you do that well, then we will keep you in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, Barack Obama is just one individual,
mm-hmm.
you know, who did the job that he did, and there were many benefits to him being there.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of advancement, keep in mind that when Barack Obama was president, there was a hesitancy on his part to be, quote unquote, too black,
mm-hmm.
because he didn't want to alienate the white people, right?
True.
People who were non-black. So mm-hmm. you had to walk that thin line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to be anything other than be black. That's who I am.
Mm.
I'm a black man in America. I was raised in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in Macon, Georgia, mm-hmm. not far from where Martin Luther King Jr. was born.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother moved us to New York at a very early age because mm-hmm. of what was going on in Georgia. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, what was happening in Georgia, it was what they call overt racism. Whereas when she moved us to the north, we then faced what's called covert racism.
Mm.
So racism was still there, and we experienced it to different degrees, but nonetheless, we experienced it.
Mm. You know, oftentimes I think, and I say it, out loud at times, that we're hostages. They're holding us hostage, because it seems as if when the slaves were free, when the enslaved were free, because none of us were slaves, they enslaved us.
Mm-hmm.
So when the enslaved were free, we were all homeless, yeah, because we had nowhere to go, really, and we've been trying to play catch up since, and we're kind of held hostage because week after week and bi-weekly after bi-weekly and month after month, we still seems to be going back to the job, the just over broke plantation. Because if we don't go back there, it seems as if we won't be able to survive. So I keep saying, Dr. Grassway, that we are held hostage. How do we, in 2025, and what can we do really? Because the struggles are real, huh?
Yes.
The struggles are real. How do we thrive? And I'm going back to Maya Angelou. How do we thrive? Because the struggles are real.
Yeah. I would argue that in order for us to begin to thrive, we have to go back to what you just said. When you said that when the Emancipation Proclamation and the so-called freedom of the slaves, and I say, or the enslaved, I say that because it, arguably we have never been free in the true sense of the word, in terms of whether it's global, because, you know, colonialism is global, but we haven't really been free. So I don't believe that many of us have actually experienced true freedom.
True.
And so there's always been that reliance, if you will. When I was raised with my mother's seven siblings, we were on welfare. So I vowed that, well, we vowed actually that we would break that chain.
Mm.
So we weren't on welfare. We all got jobs. And then you become beholden to that job, because you don't want to say certain things, because if you say these things, you might lose your job. And that goes to, if you lose your job, you lose your health benefits, and you lose your potential housing, and then you're on the streets, you're homeless. Or then you may lose your freedom by being, your relative freedom, by being imprisoned, right?
And
so you notice there's a large number of us who are imprisoned. And that cycle continues as well, right? That's a vicious cycle.
Mm.
If we look at, I go back to King. If we look at his life and his legacy, he has given us a blueprint, Tito. And if you think about other things that were said that were profound by people who are non-black, like the former governor of Alabama, George Wallace, he said, I believe it was 1965, at a rally, he said, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And the audience started, crowd started applauding. Yeah, yeehaw.
Yeah.
And if you listen to that, you can go to YouTube and listen to that clip. Segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And those people will sound exactly like those at a Trump rally.
Ah. So you understand when I say that we're held hostage. Because it doesn't matter how educated we are. It doesn't matter how much little jingles we have in our pocket and where we work and where we live. If we say something that they view, and I say the system view to be out of line, or the job view to be out of line, you'll be out of work and you may lose everything. Your health benefits, your pension, your housing. So we're kind of held in this pocket. Now, before we wrap this morning, what would be your advice? Because you mentioned the word education quite often. And like I mentioned, that Dr. King, the struggles of King went way beyond economics and education. How do we overcome? How can we overcome, Dr. Grassaway?
I think Carter G. Woodson, to me, would be a very good source. I recommend that everyone read that book, The Miseducation of the Negro, because he says, I think it's phrased autodidactic education, and that's basically educating yourself.
Yeah,
we have to learn how to educate ourselves in a very profound way. And my daughter was homeschooled.
Right.
We never sent her through a traditional school system. But those who have gone through a traditional school system need to be what's called unschooled. Right? That's the beginning, because you have to recognize that, like Malcolm X used to say, someone once asked him, what's the price of freedom? And he said, the price of freedom is death. Right?
Yeah.
And maybe that was meant in a metaphoric way, but maybe it wasn't. And that means erasure of fear. We have to be able to move away from fear. And those are the beginning steps of getting unbounded. And as you said, to no longer be hostage. Because some people, when they become hostage, it's called the Stockholm Syndrome. When they become a hostage, they begin to fall in love with their takers, those who took them.
Yes, yes.
And that's another level, right? Because that's when you begin to praise your slave master. And as Malcolm X used to say with the house Negro, when the slave master is sick, he would say, what's the matter, master? We sick?
We sick. We.
So we have to get out of that mentality as a people. And we have to start with our very own. Start with those children who are closest to you, so that you can at least give them a glimmer of hope for their future, even if yours is too late for you.
Before I ask you for your closing remarks, and you know, I keep saying, and I've said this to Dr. Karen Dunkley. Good morning, Dr. Dunkley. I've said this to Dr. Karen Dunkley on numerous occasions, that we should be very, very careful. Very, very careful. Because the colonizers are back. The colonizers are back, and they're back as investors. And I say this for small countries, that they turn around and they praise the investors that have gone into places like Jamaica and Trinidad and Guyana and Barbados. And they says, we're attracting investors. And I say, no, you guys are attracting the colonizers. That's who they are. As we pause on Monday to celebrate and remember the life and times and the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. How should we celebrate it, Dr. Grassley?
Yeah, I think we should celebrate it through reflection. Mm. I think we should celebrate it beyond the "I Have a Dream" speech and listen to many of his other speeches. His the speech, the war in Vietnam, and for our younger audience and for our educators, there's a deep speech that he gave in the Philadelphia. He gave it to a middle school audience in Philadelphia. I believe it's the only time he may have addressed a middle school audience. And it's called "What Is Your Life's Blueprint?"
Yes.
I think that's a speech that our young people, I would say, listen to that speech if you're a parent. Listen to that speech with your children and help them develop a blueprint for their lives so that we can begin to change the trajectory of all our lives. That's what I would say.
Indeed.
That's how I would celebrate tomorrow.
Indeed.
Or Monday.
I would like to thank you so much for getting up this Saturday morning to talk about the long-lasting and profound legacy of peace and nonviolent, the life and times of Dr. Martin Luther King. And as an author and an educator, I thank you so much, Dr. Bernard Grassaway. Thanks much.
I thank you, my brother. And God bless you.
Indeed. And you too, my brother. Take care. We'll talk. We'll talk soon. One love.
Okay. Bye-bye.
One love. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our featured segment. Mic check, ladies and gentlemen. I hope it was worth your time.